You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
And now, two guys who go together like bacon and eggs. Your host, Lou Costanzo, and Dr. James, don't call him Jim, Roberts.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where just because Sean thinks we're off track doesn't mean it's true. I'm your host, Lou, from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Chris in Scotland.
Chris from Scotland. Boy, I tell you, I'd spent about two weeks ago saying, Kieran McDuff, what the hell is his name again? And it was driving me crazy. So I was looking at McDuff in my emails. And then that's why I went to the forum. Because I wanted to try and find you on the forum and see if I could figure that out. And there is no forum no more. So, fascinating. Oh, but anyway, Chris, it's always good to have you on. How have you been lately, bud?
I've been good, yeah. Work is fun.
Yeah?
It's very busy. I currently have a sick child, unfortunately. And not to worry anybody, but he does have both a fever and a dry cough. So he's probably got coronavirus. I don't think it's actually coronavirus. I just think he's not well. So
yeah, I just want to say the future historians that are listening to this show, yes, this planet is really off its ass today or these days with this coronavirus crap. But as far as we're concerned, it's all overblown. And I should mention tonight's episode is lessons.
Hang on, Lou. I'm nearly going to stop you here and say that I think you should be more worried than you are. But anyway, moving on.
Okay, maybe I should. But here in the U.S., as of when I wrote you last, 32 people have died from coronavirus. And the time it's going to take us to do this show, more than 32 may die from smoking. That's my thing.
No, sure. So it's all about it's all about the numbers. It's all about how many people are you prepared to have excess mortality. And Lou, we've had discussions about this before. Your country seems to be pretty happy to have a couple of thousand people a year die on shootings at school. And, you know, if that's the threshold, if that's the tolerance, then you're fine. You're fine. I would imagine, I don't want to speculate. I do, actually. I do. But you're going to be looking at what? You're going to be looking at probably worldwide deaths north of 10,000. Now, if that's a small number and it's just part of what you want to consume, then fine. But people are getting panicky, and it's not going to be 32 for long.
You really think it could go as high as 10,000?
Globally? Yeah.
Globally. Yes. Oh, shit. Globally, more than 10,000 people are going to die from driving or getting hit by cars or getting in accidents.
Sure. Let me rephrase this a second. And I really don't think I should say this because it would make me sound more people will die of coronavirus this year than will die of terrorism. And there's a lot of inconvenience that's been put into people's life due to the fear of terrorism. And coronavirus will outstretch those. But let me caveat this slightly. I should probably mention we're talking about quote-unquote Western, you know, first world problems here. We're talking about Western Europe and America. There are, of course, a lot larger instances other parts of the world where things go on and the numbers aren't probably so so stark. But if we're talking about US and European attacks, this is going to be dwarfed. It will dwarf them many orders of magnitude.
Wow. Well, I hope not. Let's hope not. But I'm not sure it's going to get that high. At least not here. Maybe this would be a discussion. We should get on Soulforge and have this discussion too. But I saw a video on Facebook today. There was a security camera of a store. It's 1 minute it's closed. The next minute the door is open and all of a sudden the toilet papers are flying off the shelves. And I thought, you know, what if this whole problem is being overblown by the retail establishments? Because think about it, people are flooding stores to get food and water and toilet paper, and I don't know, man. Maybe it's a retail plot. at least to make it seem as bad as it seems.
Well, I don't think there aren't much margins on toilet paper. I really doubt that. One thing that you do notice, and it's a little bit eerie, to be perfectly honest. And I noticed this like 3 or 4 weeks ago. But obviously the situation has been developing in China really since the beginning of the year. And now, actually, if you look at the numbers, China is pretty much over it. They had their 10-week period, and then the stuff being reported now from China is like very small. I mean, now reporting one or two deaths every other day or so, which is like on par with Belgium. So it's very much over. If you actually start looking for stuff that is being produced out of China, like especially like on the computer side, if you look for chips, if you're looking for memory, these things are very scarce, and they are kind of worryingly scarce. And that's something that does make me a little bit concerned, because I think you've basically had RAM chips and stuff be put on pause for 2 months of the year. You physically can't find a Nintendo Switch in the UK at the moment, and you haven't been able to for about 3 weeks. So hopefully this stuff is going to come back, but I'm not sure that it's not a retail store panic. Not yet, I don't think.
Okay, well, let's hope it doesn't. So, all right, so...
Well, at least not until the end of the Picard season, right?
Mm-hmm. Hi, guys. Before we get to the review of Star Trek Picard, I want to make you aware of that we recorded the wrong Picard review for today. Therefore, to keep the review of Picard in order, you will be hearing Sean Vanderloo talking with us about Picard Episode 6 called The Impossible Box. And then you're going to hear Chris, also known as Kitten McDuff, for the review of Lessons. We apologize for this confusion. Let's discuss Star Trek Picard. Can we?
What is yes. that? Is that a show?
Did I hear O?
Yeah, the O was for me, because I thought you were going to say, before we start talking about Star Trek Next Generation, let's have another tangent. I thought that had been wrestled away from us.
We'll have one.
Let's do Picard. Because that last episode was good.
You mean the next episode was good?
Yeah. You mean...
You're a little confused,
what do you wish
Doc?
To speak about
we're,
today?
We're discussing episode 6, The Impossible Box.
Even though episode 8 just came out.
And we've all watched it.
It did? It couldn't have. We haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, that's got to be it, right? It's a time warp.
This is all so confusing. I do remember talking about Riker, but that's in the future.
Well, where's Dan in the Temporal Trek podcast to straighten all this out for us?
I don't know. Is he in the future or is he in the past?
He's everywhere.
Oh, okay. So let's go ahead and talk about...
Under general relativity, you can't ask that question. You follow a geodesic through space-time. So, come on, dudes.
Ain't no tangent there.
It is not linear.
No. Mm-mm. So, The Impossible Box. How many years have we been watching Star Trek and have never known that Romulans have two names? One for outsiders and one for family.
Well, hang on. Is that? I thought she was saying that because he was a spy rather than because he was a Romulan.
No, they've got three names.
Three names?
Yeah, they've got the name that they give to the world, the name they give to their close friends and family, and then the name that they give to their lover.
Ah.
You missed that, didn't you?
I think I did. I thought he said it like a couple times. We got two names.
No, three names. You're going to have to watch that episode again. Yeah, three.
Yeah, it's been a while. Okay, yeah, three. Okay, so they have three names. Why?
Because you need to add more mythos and backstory to this race that we have known for 50-some years, but really don't know too much about.
It is 54 years, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
We're just now finding out that... By the way, dudes, I'm still upset that I don't think the Romulans should be able to grow beards. I'm sorry. I can't take the guy seriously.
He doesn't have his bowl cut either. That makes it worse.
He's the sexy tousle-haired Romulan.
Yes, exactly. It's weird. So, Dr. Giraldi's given a report on how Maddox died, and she lists everything, you know, except for the fact that she killed him. But she's going to someday regret doing that.
You think?
I think so. I can see it. What do you guys think of... Okay, what do you think of Picard looking at a picture of himself as a Borg? He has a picture of himself as a Borg. It's like a 3D or see-through picture, and that was pretty awesome, the way the camera comes around and you could see the picture and his real face line up.
That was awesome, and you could see the age difference too from 30 years ago. Like, he's aged. They say he doesn't age, but he ages.
He doesn't age. He's aged.
You can
see it in him. He has aged. You can hear his voice is so different too.
Well, yeah. Now, if I was to go into the future and watch episode 7, where he talks to the Rikers, I would know that his voice actually changed from old man Picard to younger Picard once his mission was solidified. You notice that his voice changes. At least I would assume so, if there is a Riker and Troi episode to come up.
Well, you know, you're skipping ahead, but I believe it's going to be next week, episode 7.
Oh, is that right? Oh, they're going to have Riker and Troi. That's cool.
That's right, yeah. Well, that's what they say. I don't know what it's going to be about. I do know some female voice says, "Dad! What? Quit yelling!" I mean, yeah, we did hear that, see that part. So.
That's true. There was a preview. So that must be next episode.
Yes, so either Riker has at least one kid, or adopted a kid, or something of that extent. But we don't.
Or they've entered into a polygamous relationship.
Could have. You know them Rikers.
I hope not.
I don't think so. So, I miss the day, but I do tell you, I miss the days when Riker would yell, "Red alert!
Shields up!
Shields up! Red alert!" Yep. I miss those days. I hope to see them again one day.
That would be nice, for nostalgia's sake.
Oh, of course. It'd be so funny.
Okay, can I be a little bit critical of this? Critical of this Picard episode.
Please.
Which one are we discussing right now?
We're talking about the number 6, the impossible box, which is basically a Romulan bearded dude letting Soji come to terms with the fact that she's a robot. Mm-hmm. Bit slow, right? Mm-hmm. A bit slow? Am I the only one that thought it was a bit slow? There's the interaction with Picard and Hugh, which, I mean, to be honest with you, I know in the past / future, certain guests had a very positive outlook on it, but I didn't particularly care for it. And I'm not entirely sure why Picard would have cared for it. I mean, I think they're retconning a lot of stuff on Picard. I don't think he was this nice a person in reality.
He's mellowed in his old age.
But he certainly seems to have.
Mm-hmm. He definitely has.
He's had 14 years to think about life and what has happened to him.
Yeah, this is a slower paced episode. I somehow predict the next two will also be slower paced too. But actually, I kind of like it because in the first few, I mean, they were just blindingly fast from one bam, 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 bam to another. So I kind of like a little slowdown. Let's catch up. Let's find a little more about what the story really is about. So Raffi gets permission to board the Borg cube for one day. Picard becomes, what, an ambassador or something? And he gets to meet with the project director, who is Hugh. You like seeing Hugh? I do.
We are Hugh.
We are Hugh. Yes. He is Hugh. I predict he's going to be around for a few episodes. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him.
Oh, yeah. They're probably going to do a spinoff series about Hugh the Borg.
They should. I mean, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, guaranteed they will.
He needs to, you know, when the action comes down a little bit, sit down with Picard, talk about his life after what the Lord did to him.
Yeah, there's no way they would ever sacrifice this character to the plot. I can't see it happening.
No. Hell no. So anyway, Soji begins scanning pictures with this little device, and every single one of them was created 37 months ago. Her locket was created 37 months ago. Everything was 37 months ago, approximately. What was the significance of that? Help me with that.
So she immediately jumps to the conclusion that her reality is only 37 months old. Yes. I jumped to the conclusion that someone burnt all my stuff 37 months ago and replicated some new stuff. So why did she immediately go to something so crazy, right?
And why didn't she turn it on herself?
Yeah, she could have done that. Well, also, when you go through a transporter, do you keep your carbon dating, your quantum datingness about you?
Yes.
How does that work?
The Heisenberg compensators account for that.
So are you created out of the same matter that goes into the transporter that comes out the other end?
No, but we're going to say yes. We're going to say yes.
We can't say yes.
Because anything else would not make sense for Star Trek plot. Because things get carbon dated in Star Trek all the time, and they've already been transported. So technically they'd be brand new. But we can't have that because that's not how reality works.
So not only does the transporter break Heisenberg uncertainty principle, but it also breaks locality, right?
Yep, all the things.
Then there must be like a locality compensator as well at the same time. I don't know. I found the idea that you can scan something to see how old it is. I mean, because what is this? Look, you put a picture into a book and you scan it. Does it tell you how old you put the picture in, or is it how old the picture is, or is it the, you know, what's going on here? A lot of things are made up of other things that were created a long time ago.
True.
I mean, my if I were to scan my socks, is it the age of the socks, the age of the material that went into the socks, when I inherit the socks? What is it?
It depends on what the plot is.
I don't know. I found this slightly
ridiculous.
Well,
because the book could have been 47 months old, but when they made the thing out of the thing to fake her out, it was 37 months ago, right? So the ink in there is 37 months ago, but maybe the book is older than that, right? So, but no, for convenience of the plot, we just have to assume everything was made 37 months ago because she's 3 years old and that's it.
Okay. So a chocolate cookie, chocolate chip cookie. I mean, how's it going to determine how old that is? After the cookie's been baked 2 days ago, so it's 2 days old, or the chips were created 2 months ago, the flour a year ago?
So another thing. Now, I assume that in the future they have, like, you know, theme parks, like, you know, fun fairs, right?
Like Ryza, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. No, but I'm thinking, like, more of the Disneyland kind of thing.
No,
it's been cancelled. Go on.
It has unfortunately in Japan been shut for many months. So, in the same way that they currently like have the speak your weight machine, in the future they must have something like a carbon date your clothes machine. They must, or quantum date your clothes. Let me just correct that. So she surely would have gone through a quantum date my clothes kind of machine already. I mean, she would have been told a couple of years back that, oh, I'm sorry, you're only 1 year old. I mean, it seems like an obvious oversight to have had the material or everything around her be stuck to the same kind of, you know, quantum footprint.
Okay. Okay, so anyway, now I understand that everything was created 37 months ago. So Hugh takes Picard on a nice little tour of the Reclamation Cube. What do you guys think of the tour you put him on? As these Borg were trying, they're trying to restore these Borg.
So this was stupid because I don't know if it's the editing is bad or whether it's that people forget what they've said, but this is not the first time this has happened. Picard goes, this person's in danger, it's imperative I'm taken to her now. And then someone says, would you like a tour? And he goes, sure.
I mean, a tour.
What? I mean, he could have had the tour like afterwards.
That could be.
And, yeah, but... I'm nitpicking.
Okay.
I'll stop it.
Well, anyway, together they find Soji and they escape the Borg. He helps them escape the Borg.
They don't find Soji.
Is this the episode where the red cloud radiation is in it?
The red cloud what?
When she goes on that tour of the room.
Yes.
This okay, when Soji gets taken to the massage parlor, which is what it looked like. And she's she's given things back. Then he runs out, he says, thank you very much for the cheese. He then decides to radiation cloudify her, and then she punches through the floor.
Okay, that's right. Well, it was 3 weeks ago when I watched this last, so
that could be.
I know we're pretending that we just watched it, but
but still, while that was happening, Hugh was trying to find her and couldn't find her anywhere.
That's right, because she disappeared from the scanner. That's right.
Right, but then she was in that room. Once she got to the lower between decks, that's when he found her. They find her together, and he helps them escape. But he has a message: choose to live. Okay, good enough for me.
Excellent episode.
Why did she punch through the floor?
To escape
the
room.
She was dying?
Yeah, but she could have...
punched through the door?
Why would she have died? Why did she have to breathe?
Well, yeah, she's synthetic, but she's also human. She's flesh, so she needs to breathe.
But it's not clear to me what's going on here in terms of, what are the rules of Soji? So she's like, what's the name? Juliana Tata? Was it Tata? It wasn't
Tata,
was it?
Yeah, Data's mother.
Data's mom. Is it Data's mom that doesn't know and then can turn into like a Data and then can...
Yeah, because she was
superhuman things, or
she was an actual android. Like she had robot guts because her arm came off, so she didn't know she was an android, but her flesh or whatever was maybe I don't know.
So these new androids have that they're not androids, but they're cyborgs.
They're like people.
But so they're Cylons.
Yes, they're skin jobs. Exactly. So they also,
in a couple of episodes' time, it will be told that this has all happened before and it will happen again. are we just watching Battlestar here?
They have a plan.
they do indeed.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so they're humans, but they've got but they don't have robot guts, but they are robots, and it doesn't make sense. And we just have to go with it.
So what makes them a robot then?
Because Troy can't sense her emotions.
Oh, yeah, but in that case, Ferengi are robots, or anyone that is quite good at bluffing is a robot.
right.
But I am curious to know, what exactly is the, what is the differentiator between Soji and someone else?
I don't know. When she gets activated, she has superhuman strength somehow, but she's still made out of flesh and blood and bone, so I don't understand. They haven't really explained it very well.
And then later on, in episode 8, they do mention that they scanned them in the past and they seem to be normal. But is that because they're blocking, but they're actually made out of data inside? So is it that they're really, they can bleed?
Because we saw Daj bleed. Mm-hmm. And Soji was bleeding when she crashed through the floor. Her forehead was cut up.
Yeah, Data had some like regulating fluids inside him, right?
Sure.
That could quote, if you prick me, do I not leak?
Yeah, but did we ever see that actually happen?
With the B, bleak.
What?
Bleak.
Was it bleak with a B?
Bleak. BLEAK. Bleak.
Really?
No.
Yes.
I've gone 35 years thinking it was leak.
It is leak.
I always thought it said bleak.
Why would you say bleak? That makes no sense.
I love that quote. I use it a lot. Please don't tell me it's anything other than leak.
It's leak. L-E-A-K.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I doubt but I doubt it's the vegetable.
Yeah, it's not L-E-E-K. No.
Has to be leak. Okay, leak it is. Leak it is.
Leak? I'm not detecting any leak.
Okay, so anyway, that pretty much covers this Picard episode. So, you know, I've been giving them threes so far. This is a little bit okay, so I'll give it a 3.5 this time. What about you guys?
I'll give it a 4.
And I honestly don't remember it well enough to be able to be legitimately critical.
Right, because it was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is the first one we've had a guest on that actually could give a rating, so.
Maybe not. 7, I don't know.
You want to give it a 7 out of 5?
Yeah.
That was sure. That good.
It feels rude not to.
Seriously, come on.
You guys are ridiculous.
I'm stumped. I don't know what to do with that. 7. 7 out of 5. Okay, here we go.
Oh, I'm tired to think.
Oh my god, this is insane. Okay, so let's talk about lessons. And the synopsis for tonight's episode is Picard falls in love with one of his subordinates, bad boy, but he can't deal with having to order her into dangerous situations. This is the 19th episode of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 6, first aired on April 5th, 1993, written by Ron Wilkerson and Jean-Louise Mathias, directed by Robert Wiemer. Guest star for this episode, none. No. Well, I'm wrong. There is a special guest star. Wendy Hughes as Nella Darren. And, of course, Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So what do we think about this episode? I'm going to go first. I'm a fan of this episode. And I'm proud to say I'm a fan of this episode. Seeing Picard in love was very sweet. But as one would expect, he can't show any emotion to any crew. Or they just might think he might be a mere mortal. That's not possible. That wouldn't be a good thing for his image. So, I'm really glad they got a woman who was just tough enough to tear down his walls. But and not only feel, but show emotion that everyone around him is very aware of. Even if he tries to hide it. That's my initial thoughts. So, now, Doc, put down the crack pipe and tell me why I'm wrong.
So, pardon me? Does this really that much happen in this episode? I didn't feel that it was that profound. You know, Picard has a bit of a... Look, there isn't even a B-line... B storyline where, you know, Worf learns to hunt or something like that. It's entirely this one story. No. I just felt... did I miss something?
Well, I mean, you know, there was a little tension with the firestorms, but that kind of was a B plot, but it still revolved around him and her.
Yeah, I don't think anything really happened on that one, right? It's not as if they're cutting back to a different part of the episode, you know, each and every, each 10 minutes or anything like that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. You're right there.
I don't know. I just felt that this one was too slow and too... It didn't keep me engaged, I'm afraid. And also, Picard's was such a, he's just a little baby in this episode. He's had relationships before. So what's the... You know, why is this so hard?
You mean Vosh?
For example.
Next.
And he's obviously got a what? He's obviously got a bit of a thing for Crusher as well.
Well, of course.
And
who shows a little jealousy in this one, doesn't she?
She does. She absolutely does.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another duet, huh? No kidding. Anyway. Okay. So, not much going on for you. How about Chris?
I am probably somewhere in between because I really enjoy about 2/3 of this episode, and then I really don't care after that.
Okay. All right, then. So we're gliding through the universe when Picard is up in the middle of the night and can't sleep, probably too much Earl Grey. But he wants to talk. And so he wants to talk to somebody. Get the professor, what's his face, on the line. Sorry, sir. Stellar cartography is hogging all the computer bandwidth. Shucks. All right. Give me a little bit of information on Landris, too. Ah, nope. No dice. Stellar cartography. Oh, crap. Okay. Well, give me a cup of tea. Earl Grey. Hot. Nope. Sorry. Can't do that. Replicators are down.
At the request. How likely is this, though? Realistically, how likely?
Likely.
That would say very likely. Yeah, this just reminds me of work, where one project is hogging every single thing that you need.
Really?
Yep. So you're on an airplane or you're on a cruise ship or something. You wake up, you go over to try to get some water out the tap, and it's like, nope, sorry, it's not working. You turn the TV on, it's like, nope, sorry, not working. There surely has to be more capacity on the Enterprise than can be hogged by stellar cartography.
Right. Or there's some big thing going on at your job, so you go down to the break room to get a Snickers bar out of the vending machine, and, oh, sorry, power's being taken by stellar cartography.
Let me ask you a question. Is the Enterprise the ship to get onto if you are the best stellar cartographer in the world? Or are these the best facilities? Because it can't be better than like a research lab or, you know, regular one or something like that. I mean, slightly harder to defend. But surely people don't want to be on the flagship doing stellar cartography. Or do they? I don't know.
I would say they would, because there's two options here. Yes, you could go to a proper, specifically built for the purpose lab, like regular one or some other thing like that. The problem with that is it's statically built in one place. The other option is to go to the best ship in the fleet, which will go places to where you want to do your stellar cartography work. So this is the latter, as far as I'm concerned. This is when you go out and actually do the exploring, and then you get all the usable resources of the ship. So I don't have a problem with that. I think this is one of two places you would go. It's a bit like when Bashir joins Deep Space Nine, about the frontier medicine thing, his idea is to go one specific place, whereas the person that actually beat him in the class went on a starship.
Well, I
can imagine, though, is that had this woman turned up during the Generations years, a couple of years later, she would have had a slightly more impressive stellar cartography.
Yeah. It definitely got an upgrade.
Yeah.
Oh, it definitely got an upgrade. Yeah. Okay. Well, either way, you know, it's time to go down and visit and see what they're doing. And so he opens their door and ruins 4 hours of work and gets chastised by Lieutenant Commander Darren, who yells at him for screwing up their work and then turns around and almost passes out when she realizes she just yelled at the captain.
He's right. Lock the door.
Yes,
you've used all the power. Did you use? You brought that one yourself. I've got no sympathy for that one. That was a rookie mistake.
No. I disagree. They had to use so much computer space and so much bandwidth and everything that they just didn't have the power to lock the door. Yeah, because Ensign Joey over there forgot to lock the door before they hogged all the power.
Yeah.
What do you?
They're going to put a post-it note on the door. Just saying,
all right.
You know, busy, stay out.
Stay out. I mean, do you think the sonic showers worked? The holodecks, I'm sure, were off. I mean, so what would happen? Stellar cartography has just about every critical system shut down, and here comes a Romulan ship.
Well, Picard could have
worth of research, right?
Oh, that's true. Data could have overridden. Yeah, he could override it. But anyway, either way, she turns the replicator back on, and instead of giving him his Earl T, gives him Darren Blend number what the ever. And it was just a little bit strong. Okay, so now that she's on his ship,
so
I need to expect the unexpected.
Yeah, boom. Look, I don't need people turning up on my ship telling me what type of tea to drink. Am I just being too grumpy here?
I don't think so either. But do you think maybe he thought, oh, she's kind of cute. Maybe I'll listen to her.
Well, hang on. But okay, we're going to get into this later. But it's completely inappropriate for him to be in a relationship with this woman.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. Because even when he goes in, he talks to Deanna, he says, there are no regulations about a captain being in a relationship with a fellow officer. Yeah. But you're leaving out that fellow officer is, you know, her boss's boss is you.
Look, even at McDonald's, there are regulations about having a relationship with your subordinates.
Well, yeah.
I don't believe that there isn't the issue on the Enterprise. And in fact, in the first actual episode, Troy comes to Picard and says, hey, me and Riker, we've been a thing, you know, just for your information. So it clearly must be an issue.
Well, I think that the Riker and Troy thing from the first episode, I'm informing you this has happened in the past thing so that you're aware of it. I don't think there was anything against it. And I don't know about the situation at McDonald's, but I don't know of any specific place where you can't. You have to be careful. If you are going to be the boss and you're going to be sleeping with some subordinate, there is obviously boundary issues there somewhere along the line that you have to try and keep your personal and your private and your business life apart.
Yeah.
How easy that is to do, I don't know. You'd have to be in that position to tell me.
Well, he made the right decision. I mean,
I think we come on to that point at the end of this, is that he can't handle trying to keep that apart, so they have to do something about it, and actually that means you end up going their separate ways. But I think the thing I like even in this very early scene is she realises very quickly that she's just chewed out the captain for opening the door, and it's a bit of a, oops, I shouldn't have done that, but it doesn't last very long because she's very headstrong as a character, and we see that right away. And as soon as she goes with the tea and everything, she's at all the interactions, she's very confident, very opinionated, and she's not intimidated by his rank. I think that establishes very quickly what kind of person that she is, and it's clearly something that Picard's attracted to.
Mm-hmm. I like her. I'm not crazy about her voice, but that's such a small nitpick that I shouldn't even mention it. But I love the fact she can go toe-to-toe with Picard. She'll snap something back real quick. Not afraid of him at all. Everybody else, you know, they're like panicked when they have to pass a captain. But not her. I liked it. So, Doc, what do you think of Nella?
I mean, I'm not in love with the character. Per se, I think that she can stand her ground against the captain because she's like a science officer, right? She's not exactly on the route to command or being political about how she has to approach things. So, you know, so I think it kind of makes sense that she's, you know, she's comfortable in her role of, you know, a senior scientist on board, and will, you know, and will behave as such. But I don't know, I've never been. I think that there's a little bit of the character becoming slightly too. I think it's slightly too cliched. Maybe cliché is the wrong word, right? But she has an opinion on his music, has an opinion on his tea. It felt like she was too much of a perfect fit for Picard. Almost kind of completely designed to be the character that Picard would be attracted to. Again, yeah. I'm not making sense. So
that she's last fine. Part,
actually, I don't have that much of a problem with the actress. By the way, I think it's a strong performance, and these two obviously have the entirety of the show. And I don't think there's any, you know, there's any criticism that can be made in terms of the performance.
I was really impressed with the performance, actually. I thought the two of them played off really well against each other. But I mean, I heard it mentioned on like the Delta Quadrant and Upper Pylon 2 that it's very, very, very difficult to make you care about a relationship between two characters when one of them is a main character and one is the one-off character you've only seen in this one single episode. You can't develop a relationship properly that the audience are going to care about in a 45-minute episode. However, I think the acting between these two makes it as believable as you're going to get in that scenario.
Yes, but if you like Picard and you know he's very much alone there, kind of like Janeway. You know, she can't start a relationship with a member of her crew, so she is also very much alone. The only difference is Picard does have other people in other ships and other star bases that Janeway never had. So... anyway, Data's concert. They did pretty good, didn't they?
It was surprisingly good, given that Darren has only been on the ship about 5 minutes, that she's managed to join the band so quickly. And actually, how often could they have practiced together to be able to play that well together?
Hmm. Well, we don't know how long she's been on, though, but...
it's a matter of weeks, is it not, that we're talking about?
Oh, really?
She's just new on the ship. Picard hadn't met her until that night in... stellar cartography.
Did you
fresh on the ship?
There's a Mills and Boone book, right? One Night in Stellar Cartography.
A Night in Stellar Cartography. Did you, during the concert, did you guys at all look back at Deanna Troi?
I did, actually, to see if she was picking up anything.
Yeah,
I think she looked like she was maybe slightly amused by the fact that she'd picked up something from Picard, as opposed to Beverly, who just... I couldn't make up my mind how Beverly felt in this episode, because in the scene in 10 Forward, she makes herself scarce in a very much nudge, nudge, wink, wink, on you go, Jean-Luc, kind of way. But the rest of the episode, and you see her, she's pretty jealous. Like, yeah. Certainly dinner scene between the two of them, she just looked slightly annoyed, to be honest.
Definitely. But I was...
It was mixed signals from Beverly in this one.
I thought it was kind of cute that, you know, Picard, the look on his face, you could tell. We could tell what his emotions were. And, you know, she's just watching the concert, and all of a sudden she just looks over at him like, oh, wow, what was this? You know, maybe she doesn't know exactly what's going on, but yet she's picking up something from him. He's definitely got some hormones squirting out mentally. So, okay. Anyway, they both need to expect the unexpected now that he's on her she's on his ship. So...
I love the back and forth flirting between the two. That's one of the it's one of the very small details in this episode that I think makes it really good. It's just it's the kind of flirting that would develop a kind of relationship between the two of them.
Here's another thing I like about this here that happens at least twice in this episode is Picard's emotions, the way he talks, he changes pitch. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. She visits him in his quarters and she notices that flute and, you know, what is that? And I could feel Picard just, you know, almost slightly becoming emotional when he says, mm-hmm. you know, it's a Resican and, where did it come from? I like those two two moments when he's talking about the flute and how he learned to play it. And then he talks about his wife, his children, his grandchild, and you could see he's just dying inside as he's having to relive these moments as he's describing it to her. And that is what I think made the episode stand out so terrific, so terrific. Picard nailed this one, or Sir Patrick nailed this one, I believe.
Yeah. There was a subtle moment even before he goes into detail about the Resican stuff later on in the episode. But the first time when she asks him how long he's been playing, he just says a long time. And even when he has that line, there's a look on his face to sort of go as if he's remembering the stuff from being a light. It's just one line and one look. It just tells you so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he went from talking like this to a long time. It was soft and it was... That's what gets me. And I love these kind of moments in Star Trek where they just tug at you, and or any kind of story where they tug at you, and making Picard go through, you know, that rough time in his life again. But I do wonder... He was telling her about Catan, how it went supernova more than 1,000 years ago, and he tells her about the family he once had, and she says, why are you telling me this?
Is it Catan? It's not Catan.
Catan.
Is it? No, I thought that was from the Last Outpost.
No, it was Catan that went supernova when it started.
Sorry, when you just mentioned it, I just thought... Hang on a second. Isn't that also from The Last Outpost? Okay, carry on. I'm obviously on a different page here.
The Last Outpost? Huh? You know I'm going to look it up, you know.
No, okay. It honestly doesn't... Do not need to look at this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway. Okay, so... So now we've... talked about what we think about it. What about you, James? I mean, what are your thoughts on the way he did those two scenes?
Oh, by the way, everything you're saying is correct. It really is, you know, it is correct. You certainly have an extremely a very good performance by the main character, in particular Picard. It's very good. And you do, you know, we obviously know the history here before she does, and it's very clear that, you know, we get to pick up on this, that, you know, that there's something here that's not that it's painful, but it's emotional, and it is it's something that we know that Picard wouldn't necessarily open up to for anyone.
Mm. No. Okay. And so they also met up with the Ferengi ship and a planet in the Delphi Ardu system. So they really didn't identify the planet either. So they play together. I mean, of course, in his quarters when, you know, she pulls out that piano thing and they try to play, Bach? And, wait. I'm not used to playing with people, just a computer. So what do they go to next? Farah Shaka.
So that was a total euphemism, by the way.
What's that?
I'm not used to playing with people, just a computer.
Yeah. Well, I've been so lonely lately, sometimes I only play with a computer. All right. So, but anyway, she does start Farah Shaka. I don't know.
It's a bat on the nose, that bat, I think. Playing some of the most... French tune you could probably think of.
All right. Well, what I think he should have done was said, hey, wait, stop. I'll be right back. Go and gather up all those children and let them come in and, you know, Captain Picard day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bring the kids in if we're going to play Farah Shaka. Okay.
Maybe it was the age I was at the time, because this was, what, 1992, 1993. So I was like the 1992-93 time this episode was out, would have been about the time I would have seen it.
This one?
I think so, yeah.
No, I think it's later than that. In the UK it would have been, I think it would have been like 96 in the UK.
As late as that?
Yeah.
I mean, because I was thinking along the lines of when I was at school, I was quite into music, and because at primary school I did the recorder, which is as close as I got to Risk and Float. And then by the time this comes out, I'd have been in secondary school and I'd have been doing music class. And...
Yeah, 1990.
So the idea of playing Farah Shaka, I'm pretty sure I probably did that at school at some point. And the improvising stuff is just spot on. That's exactly the kind of thing we were encouraged to do in music class. So I like how that comes across in this episode. I mean, what you said earlier, there's not a lot happens in this episode, but as far as action is concerned, I agree. But I think there's a lot of character building. There's a lot of things I identify with in this episode, and I think the music itself is one of them. And that's probably why I like it so much.
Yes. Yeah. And so after a little bit, they end up in the Jeffries tube to do some practicing. Sounded sweet, didn't it?
She did say it was the most acoustically pleasing part of the ship or something along those
Absolutely.
Lines. And you could hear it. You could definitely hear it. It was an improvement, especially when she starts playing the piano on her own. I can't remember exactly what tune that was.
They play the...
Was it Moonlight Sonata she played?
The what?
Was it Moonlight Sonata? Is that what it's called? It's a beautiful piece of music. She plays the piano. You hear it really well.
The one that Picard learned on Catan. The piece of music he always plays the flute on.
The Skyboat song.
Yeah, and you know, I end every show with that flute. I've done the same flute from day one to day 10 years later. Wait a minute, I'm going on 11 years since the Lutrec show started, and I have used that flute in different lengths, depending on how long our goodbye is, ever since then. And I was listening to that yesterday. And I thought, why don't I get that, the whole thing from the piano all the way to where we hear it in engineering and then fade it out as our show is ending when we really have a lot to say goodbye. I thought that'd be kind of cute. So I'm going to possibly look into doing that.
So there was a 30th anniversary album out, I suppose 20 odd years ago now. And on there, there was an orchestral version of the music from Dead or Light, and it's a chunky piece of music, and it starts off with a flute, but it builds up terrifically. It's probably one of my all-time favourite pieces of music from Star Trek. I'm a bit like Mark Stamper, and I think Dead or Light itself is overrated, but I think this episode takes the things that I liked from Dead or Light and builds on it really nicely. The duet the two of them do in that chamber with the music from the Inner Light, I think is beautiful. I really enjoy listening to it. So if you're going to clip that, I will be delighted. That is Skyboat song though. Being Scottish, I recognised that the first time I heard it. Again, Skyboat song is something I would have played at school, so I recognised the similar tune at the start of it.
Wow! You know, while you've been, you can't hear it, but while you've been talking, I went to YouTube and put in the orchestral suite from The Inner Light. It really does sound nice.
It's a beautiful piece of music.
Yeah, it very much is. I don't know if I could find it for download, or maybe I could put it in right here or just let it play while we're talking. But, wow, that is mind-blowing. Okay, better stop, bro. Never get through it.
I can't remember if you see it in this scene, but certainly you see it in his quarters. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's not Patrick Stewart's hands. So the front on view of him playing the flute is actually somebody else reaching up from off camera and doing the finger work.
You mean as the camera was backing up from the Jeffries tube or what?
No, when he's in his quarters, actually, like you're watching somebody play the flute. There's a scene where it's not his hands. Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Really? Yeah. He couldn't be bothered to
it was more a case of somebody had to be there to make it look more realistic that he was actually playing a musical instrument.
Really? That blows my mind. All right. Well, anyway. All right. So we talked about Dr. Crusher and how she's been jealous of him lately. And we never did get to see Picard and Riker do their fencing.
Hang on, by the way, have we gone past the bit when they were playing in the Jeffrey's tube and then LaForge and Data can like overhear the music?
Yeah, that was next.
Oh, so that's coming up?
Yeah, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, all I know is that, right, you know, obviously Geordi goes, oh, I can hear music. And he goes over and then Data's like, what music? I can't hear it. But clearly Data has a much, much, much better sense of hearing than Geordi does. Mm-hmm. But by the time, you know, the joke is that by the time that Data's there, he can't hear music, they've stopped playing. But as far as I can work out, Data should be able to say, I can't hear any music, but there are two people up there copulating, aren't there? I mean, he should be able to hear the entire thing.
That would have been brilliant if he'd actually said that. But you're right, his hearing should be far more attuned to what was going on. He should have heard it before Geordi did. All this does is make Geordi think back to that time that Deanna heard the music box in her head over and over again.
Oh, yes.
I think he might be going mad. He might be taking a trip to sickbay just to be on the safe side.
All right, anyway. So you're saying that however many decks up they were, Data could have said, well, I don't hear any music, but I do hear what sounds like kissing.
Yeah, or rhythmic vibrations. I don't know.
Or somebody's... Yeah, I was going to say, or somebody's head keeps hitting the wall of the Jeffrey's tube. I don't know what that's about. Okay. Fencing.
He knows.
He knows. Yes. We find out Picard is fully functional. And then there's a turbo lift scene. You know, they're together talking about some guy and his music and how wonderful it was. And, oh, I've never heard such beauty. It's so great. And then all of a sudden comes in. Very well, Commander. Thank you. She couldn't have figured out what happened there.
I think she knew what happened, and we see it when Picard, when he talks to Troy and gets her advice on it, and then immediately he goes back to Darren and apologises to her, which, fair enough, I think that's probably the right thing to do, because he is still in the position where he's captain of the ship, he has to appear that way, he has to be the authoritative man, figure on board, and he's still a bit unsure as to whether this can be something that everybody can know about as well. I think it's an understandable reaction. It's certainly a reaction he has to apologise for. Mm-hmm. He has the chat with Troy to make sure he's doing the right thing and everything's okay. I think it's another piece of the puzzle that shows to us that Picard is human. He's capable of making these mistakes. He's also capable of doing the right thing and going to apologise for it. And the relationship is probably a stronger one because of that.
Well, he says, what do you think about this? And, you know, oh, you mean you and Commander Darren? Is it that obvious? And she does say yes to the people who care about your happiness, sure. So you got to wonder, how much gossip is going on about this time?
Oh, lots. There's bound to be lots of gossip. It's a ship of, what, 1,000 people. There's bound to be lots of gossip going on. I mean, I don't know what the kind of your work experience is, but certainly gossip seems to be universal no matter what size of what size the company is at the time. I've heard quite a few stories in my time.
Okay. But he gets Deanna's permission and decides, okay, I'm all ready for this. Let's go in and have a talk with her until she says, yes, sir. Is there something you need? Or something to that extent. And that's when she realizes, oh, I need to backtrack a little bit here.
She definitely gives him what he deserves. But again, he apologizes quickly. He tells her the truth. She's... quickly forgives him, and then they share a story. Well, he shares the stuff about his music, which it's a good indicator of how he's looking to progress the relationship further. They're getting a bit more intimate and personal, and it brings them closer again because of it. So yeah, it's a very good example of how relationships aren't all peaches and cream all the time. Sometimes you have to work at it, and this is working at it.
Okay. All right. And of course, you know, there has to be some kind of conflict involved. So let's have Darren confront Riker about getting a new employee. Yeah, but they don't want to get rid of him. Yeah, but I told him he could come here. I already offered it to him. You know, wait a minute. Do you realize what position you're putting me in? And, you know, I'm just doing the best thing for my team. Well, think about it. But what's he do? He runs to the boss. Dude, you got to get your woman in line.
Riker is bang out of order with us. Because as Picard rightly tells him, she's just doing her job as best that she can. She wants to build the best team she can get. She's talked to somebody about it. She's maybe poaching from somewhere else, but really shouldn't really be doing that, as Riker chooses her out for. Nobody does the job here. Nobody's bad at doing their job here. She's doing exactly what she's expected to do. Riker's doing what he should be doing, and Picard kicks Riker's ass for coming to complain about it in the first place. It's brilliant leadership, I think. Because in the end, Riker ends up leaving that room feeling happy about his own performance.
Well, he did throw him a bone, you know.
Yeah.
She's just doing what she needs to do, and you do what you need to do. So I wasn't sure how to take it. If, you know, I have full confidence. He said he has full confidence in his decisions.
It was such a perfect chewing out, because it chewed him out in a way that made him feel better about himself. Mm-hmm. It's expertly done.
Okay. Oh, so anyway, we've been talking quite a long time now, but we really haven't gotten to the main story of this episode, and that's the firestorms.
Is that the main story? We got about half an hour of the build-up to this, and yes, that's the half hour of the episode I really like. I like the relationship building between Darren and Picard. It works really well. There's lots of interesting stuff happening for me. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier with Star Trek Picard. It's more like a story, like a book. Like, you pick it up, there's a bit of time to build stuff. The problem here is it's only a 45-minute episode. We now have 15 minutes to deal with the peril, and the peril is boring.
It was.
Sorry, I don't like this bit of the episode.
Let's say we came across a Romulan who kidnapped her and their team and is holding a disruptor to her head. I mean, what will he do about that? Do you think that would have been more interesting than these firestorms?
I think most things would have been more interesting than these firestorms, to be honest. Yeah. I get that they are an interesting thing to see, and fair play to Darren. When she's down there, she takes the opportunity to have a look. I think I'd probably have done that as well. But it's all very much, this is going to hit this research lab that's built on a planet that this happens all the time. Mm. Weren't prepared for it, really. You just batten down hatches and get on with it. To me, this is like, oh no, there's a hurricane and we're in Florida. Yeah. She didn't know that.
Yeah. But, okay, so she's a stellar cartographer, or a stellar cartographist. I don't know. Fist. But where is she the one that should be leading this team?
I didn't understand that either. If you're wanting a fireball set up, you phone the sister admin, do you not?
No, I think it was all because she said, well, we used to use these kind of systems on whatever planet she says. So, I mean, I guess that means, okay, well, then you know what to do. So you get join the team. It's completely outside of your field of work. But, hey, why not?
I want to know when she was using this, because it just didn't make any sense at all. It seemed like it was completely outside her field of work, like you say. Even in a previous job, it just seems so different from what she was doing previously.
But she ain't doing that no more. Her job is different now. Okay. So, James, anything you want to jump in, or did you pass out?
No, no, I'm still here. I have nothing more valuable to add.
Oh, so, good. We'll let the naysayers stay out, Chris.
But it's a valid point, right? Someone that's in stellar cartography basically maps stars. That's what the job is.
But she's deploying deflectors today.
Well, the thing is, it's probably like, we used something like this. And Riker's like, did you? Prove it. I think you're bluffing.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're not showing favoritism here. Yeah. We have a very important job for you. So let's all do it. Let's go, guys. Commander Darren, could you stick around a side second here? Yeah, those deflectors. Is everybody gone? You ain't got to do it. I can pull strings. I can make somebody else do it. No, that's not what we agreed to. Oh, damn, you're right. So he lets her do it. And really, it's they deploy these deflectors. They started to fail, so they use their hand phasers to create little pockets of, I'm not exactly sure what, you know, but they were able to get in them and wait it out. But we still did lose. Didn't they still lose 8 people in this mission?
Weird counting in this one. So I think they did, 6 teams of, there was 12, was it 12 people and 18 people in total? I think, because it was either three in a team or 2 in a team, and there's 6 teams. Well, and then they talked about, so Riker said something like, there was 2 teams still down there, so to me that was 4 people.
Yes.
And then when they beam them up, there seems to be 4 survivors that got off the pad, and then they beam up Darren with another couple of people. So there's about 7 or 8 people who seem to appear, and then they lost another 8, so isn't that 16?
It made no sense to me either. 12 people went down, there were 4 teams, 2 each. 12 people went down, 4 teams were beamed back, that leaves 2. Team whatever and team 3, and Nella was on team 3. So we still have 4 people down there. And when they come back, there's at least 3 of them that beam back, and then she beams lastly. Where'd the deaths come from? Unless they beamed up 8 dead bodies.
Well, they walked off the pad, so they didn't look very dead.
Yeah, they didn't. They were. Yeah, I probably should have counted how many people went through. The only thing I could think of is when things were starting to go to hell, they beamed people down. But did they beam them after the deflectors were up? That would make no sense. So yeah, there is something wrong in the math here. Yeah. You know, 24th century math has to be different than what we're used to. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, in between time, I think there's the best part of this last 15 minutes is when Picard is sitting alone. The orchestral music is there. It's very sad sounding. And he gets up and just closes the box. Because he's now so heartbroken, he can't even bring himself to play that instrument that's now going to be tied to her because that's his recent experiences. So again, that bit feeds into the whole love story that we've got for across the 45-minute period. So it's another little subtle part of it, but I think it works really well. And again, it's something you can kind of relate to.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I probably would have done exactly what he did, and it hurt to watch him sit there in his quarter, staring in, you know, off into the distance, and then look over and see that flute and realize that he never wants to pick that up again and just walks over to it and closes a box. And that was sad. That was sad. Mm-hmm. Until he hears that there was survivors. Oh, right. Let's go. And, of course, you were expecting her to come off the pad, and she doesn't. She doesn't at first. And, you know, that just hurts because he assumes, you know, she's dead down there somewhere. Until she finally beams up and he is so happy. But she just gives him a glance and then walks out.
I wonder. She explains later she went through a traumatic experience because she watched people burn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was, that had to be hard. All we could do is sit there and watch. Okay. So they talk about what they're going to do. Well, one of them could resign their commission She could resign and stay with him on the Enterprise, or he could resign and go with her to some star base. Neither one sounded like good ideas.
So what's the implication here? Were they going to attempt some kind of long-distance relationship after this? Or were they just admitting defeat and, okay, we need to go separate ways now, bye-bye?
I think they knew they were going their separate ways and bye-bye from the whole start. But, hey, let's pretend that, you know, there's no reason why we couldn't stay together. We could subspace each other, you know, subspace sex each other. They call it the triple S. Can you
hook that into the holodeck?
Sure, why not? Sure, why not? I mean, you know, Geordi's done a lot of work in the holodeck, I'm sure. Remember all the discussions we've had about being the holodeck cleaner?
Mm-hmm. The mop-up monkey.
I do not want that job. I don't want that job. You know. Okay, Lou, your job today is you got to clean up holodeck number 3. And LaForge was in there last night, so all the power to you. Crap. Nope, not crap. Piss on it. Nope, not that either. Good luck, bud. Anyway, but yeah, I would say they have subspace communications and Mr. Worf, give me a
private channel.
Yes, a private channel. Private channel. Give me a secured line. Yes, sir. Anyway.
Call it up. What are you wearing? My uniform. Ah, Peter.
Yeah. Captain, why are you out of your uniform? I was talking to somebody recently. And then we're going to go on shore leave together. You know, people do make it work, he says. Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's why we never hear from Dan ever again.
Never again. We have no idea whatever happened to her. All right. She probably got killed in a firestorm. Or, yeah, no, I don't know. All right. What did I miss, guys?
No, I think you got it.
Okay, then. All right, so let's go ahead and give our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. And Chris, you're the guest. You go first.
Yeah, so as I said throughout this, I think it's very hard to have a one-shot romance episode. We've heard from the Delta Quadrant, we've heard from Alpha Pilot 1-2 many times about how they just don't work. You can't make us care about a character we only see in one episode and the relationship with one of our main characters in a 45-minute episode.
Are you serious? What about that one where Harry Kim had that fling in the Gamma Quadrant and who cares?
That's a perfect. You know, the perfect example is that one episode where they bring back a former character from the episode. Over Lindsay Ballard or whatever her name was. That's the perfect example of one that doesn't work at all, because she was a former crew member that we never saw before.
Never saw, never interact with anyone, and had left no trace of anything on anyone. I mean, they could have just at least used like one of the guys that are in that's an extra every now and again. Someone that you would have seen, or maybe just bring them in for a couple of episodes early on in the season, because you know you're going to pick that story up in a couple of months' time.
That would have been much better.
Yeah.
So, maybe Voyager was all through the Doctor's perception, and since it was erased. Okay, so...
I think you're being very generous. No. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted. I interrupted, Chris. So, okay. Chris, you should keep going.
One last thing. James, in 15 years, when we get to that episode, let's invite Chris back.
Yeah, I honestly think the coronavirus will get me by then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Go on, Chris. Sorry.
As much as I've said that, I think if you're going to attempt that kind of episode, this is about as good as you're going to get. The acting from Patrick Stewart is terrific. The actor from... I forgot her name that plays Nella Dern. I think she's really good as well. I think the two of them work really well together. It's believable, the two of them. They use a lot of subtle little ways to make you invested in the relationship that they're having. The use of the music as a way for them to bond is terrific. And I think everything they do for the relationship in this episode is really good, and it's about as good as you're going to get for one shot. However, it does mean you've got the cost of, we've spent half an hour building this up, how do we finish the episode? The peril in this episode is weak. It gets us to the end where they have to split again. It's not the greatest. It does make it feel like this episode just drops off without having any real resolution. Even if we'd heard that maybe they'd attempted the long-range relationship after this, it might have saved the ending of this a bit. But you never really believe at the end of this that they're going to stay in touch. You never hear from Darren again. And it's disappointing because they've spent so long in the episode building up the relationship that when you get to the end, you don't really believe either of them are that heartbroken that this is the only choice that's left open to them. Because they've obviously went through all the options that they've got and come to the conclusion that they can't really be together, and they're having to go their separate ways because of that. You don't feel it. And I think that lets the episode down. And as much as I would like to rate this higher, I think I can only give it a 3 out of 5 because of that.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. You cut out just that last part. Say that again.
The part where I said that I think because of the big drop off at the end, and we don't really care that they've separated, it's only really a 3 out of 5 for me.
Okay, 3 out of 5 for you. Yeah, I was heard about the drop off. Okay, what? All right. Oh wow, a 3 out of 5. I'll be honest, I didn't see that coming. Okay. I'll change it. Okay, for me, I don't know. Doc, how about you? You do next. I want to end on a good note here.
Well, so I think the problem here is that I think I am less articulate, and I am also have a less strong argument than either of you two on this. I'm just not captured by this relationship as much as I think either of you two are. I think that it's very well acted. I think that the points that you've made in terms of the performance and how it, how the story is told and how it's told well, are valid. I think they really are. I also think the criticism about how it ends and stuff is also valid. Now, you could never have something like this creep into the next episode. Otherwise you'll end up having to pay royalties on the writers and things like that. And the last thing we need is that if they do have a long distance relationship, at some point someone's going to get bored because they're going to want to introduce another love story for Picard, and they'll have just this woman die in a fire in the same way they did with his nephew. So one of the problems with episodic television, I mean, ironically, having had our discussions about Picard, is that you have to be one and done with this kind of stuff. And it's very hard to build up a relationship and be one and done. When, Chris, you were mentioning about there are very few examples of it working well. Frankly, the first thing that came to my mind was the first Julian and Garak episode. although at that time, I don't think you were explicitly talking about romantic relationships, but that's something that did spring there. I think overall this is probably a good episode of Star Trek. It is different than other episodes, and I do think that it has its merits. I think the Picard's a little bit weak in how he's reacted, and this thing about I don't quite know how I'm going to be able to treat you objectively as if we weren't in a relationship, and as a result, everything's going to collapse. I feel like I would have tried to hold on more than he does. And at the end of the day, I don't think he really has that many kind of, I guess, setbacks, right? He has a slight setback of you know, talking badly in Turbolift, and he has a slight setback of, well, how, you know, don't get sent down there, maybe send someone else down there, and then the death. But it just didn't feel like there was a huge amount of conflict within Picard on those issues. However, by the way, I've been kind of come round to thinking this is better than I originally thought on the back of our discussion, and I was going to land at a 3 out of 5 as well. So, yeah, it's good. You know, it is good, and it's a change of scene. Now, Lou, tell us why it's a 5.
Just out of curiosity, you said you kind of came around, which was I was hoping you'd say, but were you planning a 2?
Well, to be honest with you, I very rarely cement my ratings ahead of our discussion. Yeah, I obviously have my thoughts, and I have what I think, you know, what my, you know, my opinion of the episode. But I'm often very much guided by the kind of discussion that we can have. And frankly, I think an episode that you can sit down and discuss well, and there are a lot of valid points that get brought up, that generally does push me higher in my ratings. And one that is not, you know, doesn't work, and it's, and you know, no one has much to say about it. It often just belies the fact that it's a much more simple story, or there's not really much going on. So, I kind of didn't think I was coming in at a 4 or a 5, but also, I mean, I'm not, you know, I wasn't coming in here thinking, well, this is gonna get, it's gonna get the first 0. That wasn't my thought process.
Unfortunately, we set the rules 1 to 5 back when we started, or Shades of Grey would have been our first 0.
But by the way, look, I'm giving you notice now. I'm going to break those rules at one point. So just be aware that's coming. I will break the rules.
Wow, a 0, huh? Or you're going to do 0. A half point.
No, well, we will see.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't know you actually gave your rating at the end. I have my rating from last night. Okay. I like it. I absolutely am crazy about this episode, because I like... This is not a side of Picard that we ever see. And just because he had an adventure with Vash, I don't really think he was in love with her at all. And even if he was, he still had the Ferengi to deal with and these futuristic, ugly people. So it wasn't the same kind of thing, no matter if he's dated anyone in the past or if he's had feelings for someone in the past. This is, you know, other than the inner light was probably a, you know, a better Picard love story, so to speak. But this was formed because of Inner Light. So I believe this is kind of an extension of it with a real woman, I'll call her, instead of the one the probe gave to Picard. And therefore, I don't know if I want to call this more real or something. I'm not sure. But I think it's a nice heartfelt episode. You're cheering for Picard the whole way. He just found happiness. And then he feels this heartbreak when he talks about Catan and his wife, that it was absolutely real. Because to him, it was. It's kind of reminds you of Deep Space Nine, doesn't it? With the hard time. It's kind of like something that O'Brien goes through, but it's a different story, different situation. But when he sits in his quarters thinking that he ordered the woman he loves to her death, you could see him shut down. You could see him just stare ahead. What am I going to do? Well, I'm never going to play this thing again. You know, and you hear the box close. And that was tough, because it's sad. He practiced on that for a very, very long time. And to know that it would never again be used to bring him joy, that was just, to me, that's heartbreaking. I don't know why she... What in her job makes it so great that she couldn't have resigned her commission and stayed? We never discussed that. Who... Is there any justification why she should have resigned compared to him and go to a starbase? What do you guys think on that? Should she have?
Well, hang on. Let's assume for a second that she stays. How many away missions really do this that a cartographer's gone? I mean, surely this must be like a one-and-done situation.
It's not about that. It's about her department gets better resources. Her department gets better equipment. She gets whatever day she wants off. She gets anything she wants. If she wants somebody fired, he fires him.
What's happening there, though, is that then Geordi and Worf and all of the other senior officers have to up their game and have to become a little bit more friendly towards Picard.
Yes, but still, like Riker, don't you think a relationship with the captain pretty much will neuter Riker? He ain't gonna have say against her.
No, I do, and actually, I think that's something that is. It does get picked up, right? And you do see Riker basically just being incapable of being able to handle this.
Right.
Yeah, and I still think Picard handles that really well because he then tells Riker that he has every faith in him to do his job. So I think that gives Riker the power back that he should have.
Sure. But he's still going to be wondering if I cross her, what's going to happen to me? Okay. All right. So, like I said, this really is one of my episodes, and it's right behind the story, The Inner Light, which feeds into the story. It's very good. And you guys, I don't know. I hope you're sitting down. Don't stand up yet, because I love it enough to give it a 5. Yeah, somebody just fell out on their desk, didn't they? I think I heard that. I can't find any flaws with it except for the Firestorm. I wish they would have thought of something a little better than Firestorm, because there's no reason for her. Maybe they have to map a certain sector that the Enterprise can't go into, but a shuttlecraft could. And, of course, now who's going to be the one to do that? It has to be her, as dangerous as it is. And, of course, danger does happen, and now we have to find a way to make it so the Enterprise can go and save her.
Okay, quick question here. Should her character have been killed? Should Picard have to live with the guilt?
No.
No.
I would rather it would live with some heartbreak, though. But he didn't live with that either.
Well, losing her was enough heartbreak. You know, because she even says, promise me one thing, you won't give up your music. So, but had she died... That was done. There'd be no more flute in his life. There'd be no more music in his life. He probably wouldn't want to go to concerts. He probably, because she was at the last concert he went to. He will shut everything that made their relationship what it was out of his life. So no, I don't believe. I'm glad she survived. I understand why she had to leave. Now they're gonna have to find the new head of Stellar Cartography. It's a shame that I don't have any references for that, but it's, whatever Firestorms, in whatever flaw they may have had with it, I'm still giving this 5 solid gold-pressed Latinum stars. Stunned silence.
No, not stunned. Just acknowledge that you've mentioned that.
All right. Okay, so how are we feeling, boys?
A new episode of Picard has just dropped.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did.
I think it did.
So I'm going to go up and watch it.
Wait, now.
I got to go up and watch it. So, all right. Chris, thank you for coming on. It's been nice knowing you, but apparently... You're done with us. I got you on nothing.
That can't be right, surely.
No, it is. I've got you on nothing. The only thing I have available for season 6 is Suspicions. But I got plenty of season 7 stuff that Colin hasn't bogarted. I mean that nicely, Colin.
I thought I'd put my name down for a few things in season 7 as well.
Yeah, go ahead, because I've tried to limit it to 2 guests. Because once you get too many more, it's too hard to manage. But I've only got Colin and Sean and, hey, look at that, Data Logan. Ooh. Fascinating. I've forgotten all about Data. Sorry. Again. But, so start thinking of something you want to come on. If you want suspicions, give me an email. And in season 7, what would you like to get on?
I thought I was down for Parallels. And I also thought I was down for Sub Rosa. I thought I was going to take the hit.
Which one? I'm sorry, what was that first one?
Parallels.
Parallels. Yeah. Oh, I got to be honest, sometimes a Scottish accent gets me going, what did he say? Okay, I will put you in for Parallels, and
if you don't have me on for Sub Rosa, there's something wrong.
I've got nobody for Sub Rosa, so no, I've got you. Okay.
You should probably see if you can get Robert Reyes as well, because he's the guy that likes Sub Rosa.
Robert Reyes?
Yeah.
We've had him on, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
I'll put him in, and at the suggestion of Chris. So when we get there, I won't say, you asked for this episode, and he'll say, huh? Okay. I did not, but... That's cool. All right, guys. Hey, thanks for coming on again. Unless we have anything else, it's time to say goodbye. Okay, goodbye. Then.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye. So join us next time as we review episode number 20. And that's going to be The Chase. The Chase. Okay, we'll get there and chase it. So everyone, take care and good night.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Nighty night. Okay.
I was trying to think of a game show joke about the chase, but I just couldn't think of anything.
You know, what's weird is I'm having troubles remembering what the chase is.
It's the one about the founder lady that has put DNA into all of the different races as a way of bringing people together and having a nice hug.
Oh, that's right.
That's so a really bad explanation of the episode.
Yeah, pretty much. But we have Professor Galen, right?